Welcome, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one audio source for Harry Potter news, theories, discussion, as well as info straight from the makers of the books and films themselves, like me, Matt Lewis. I play Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter films, and I'm very happy to be here helping introduce your hosts, the Pottercast trio, Melissa, John, and Sue.
Welcome to Pottercast 74.
Yes!
Yay!
74! I've been looking forward to this one all week.
I'm Melissa, I'm here with John and Sue. As always, in this show, we'll talk to an author who many think writes like J.K. Rowling. Interesting, his name is Fergus McGee. We'll see if that's true. We'll also do our canon conundrums about what Snape's Patronus and Boghart might be.
Shampoo? Was shampoo involved?
Shampoo is all
better.
Those things. But before we do anything, let's hear from our people at Borders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Borders. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows is coming soon. But when? Click on the Borders banner at the top of Pottercast.com homepage. Sign up and you'll be among the first to learn the release date of the final book in the series. You can also reserve your copy of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows at any Borders store. Find a store near you at BordersStores.com.
And we're back. An announcements this week. Vote for us at Podcast Alley. Dig us at DIGG.com. Link in the show notes. We're going to be at Phoenix Rising, the convention in New Orleans on May 17th. You can go to it by signing up for the convention at thephoenixrises.org. We'll also be presenting two panels at Phoenix Rising, we think. More on that later. We're going through it fast this week because we got a lot to get to, so we're going to roll into this week's news with Sue's.
Well, we do have a bit of news again about Laura Mallory, the woman from Georgia who is continuing in her attempts to have the Harry Potter novels removed from school shelves and who has now written an op-ed piece in an Atlanta newspaper. Miss Mallory says she will not give up in her quest and says she is not alone in her stance as she claims there are, quote, hundreds, even thousands of other parents who have stood up against the Harry Potter series and its paganization of this generation, end quote. She continues on to say that her relentless pursuit of the beloved series, quote, it has not been an easy path to take, but one in which I know I must not quit. God has been with me, answering specific prayers and reassuring me of his will and his word, end quote. You can read all of Laura Mallory's comments by clicking on LeakyNews.com for much more. Well, another book news now. Several thousand Harry Potter books were stolen from a recycling center in the country of Wales last week. Missing were copies of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and Quidditch for the Ages, the two Harry Potter school books that J.K. Rowling wrote for charity several years ago. No culprit in this theft has been caught as of yet, and police are asking for your help. These two Harry Potter books have raised millions of dollars in the past for the Comic Relief charity. Speaking of the books, there was an interesting survey conducted in the UK recently where up to a third of all respondents admitted lying about reading certain books, including one Harry Potter novel. 1 in 20 men even said they would lie about having read Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone so they would appear as if they were in touch with the latest trends. Okay. In film news now, we saw a new interview with actress Ivana Lynch that appears in the new issue of Disney Adventures magazine, where she talks about her audition for the role of Luna Lovegood. Ivana says, quote, I really wanted to go, because if I didn't, I never would have known, and I would have been annoyed with myself. They had to pick someone, so why couldn't I have a go? It's like in the script when Harry's trying to encourage some of the students to be in Dumbledore's army. He says, think of all the great wizards in history, and if they can do it, why can't we? It was kind of like that, end quote. Yay, Ivana, you go, girl. You can see the scan of this entire interview in our galleries. Finally, congratulations are in order for Prisoner of Azkaban director Alfonso Cuarón, whose latest film, Children of Men, received multiple nominations for this year's Academy Awards. Mr. Cuarón was nominated personally in the categories of Best Editing and Adapted Screenplay, with the film picking up many other nominations as well. Just terrific. The Academy Awards will be presented in Los Angeles, California on February 25th. Congratulations, Alfonso. Well, for complete information on all things Harry Potter, you can always find more at LeakyNews.com, which is updated continually. Sorry about my cold, everyone. And back to the show we go.
Well, lots of news, Sue.
Yeah. Both good and bad, I guess. I don't know.
Good end.
We have good news?
Good,
or just good news?
Yeah.
Good in the never-ending Laura Mallory news cycle.
She just...
Don't go
know,
away.
She doesn't.
Oh, other things aside, this woman does not give up.
Nope.
You gotta respect that in some weird way.
She probably is a Hufflepuff.
Well, no, because she doesn't believe in that kind of thing.
She'd be an unwitting Hufflepuff. She'd be a forced Hufflepuff.
Yes.
I can just imagine if somebody walked up and called her a Hufflepuff. What would happen?
They no!
Really not no! I really wish she'd speak to people that might challenge her beliefs.
Yeah, I do too.
Where's the fun in that?
Yeah.
I know, you can either just, you know, preach out loud to people who agree with you, or you can really get into it and prove your point if you feel like you have a point to defend.
Yep.
Her and J.K. Rowling, 10 rounds.
It'd be fun.
Be hilarious.
It was interesting to hear from her more about what she's after or what she's trying to say that she's doing, but she just kind of defeats her own purpose, and I mean, you try and be fair and you read these things, but it was very difficult for me to read that article, and I would like to hear more from her.
We don't understand. I think it's a disservice to just put this out there and say, Harry Potter's bad, Harry Potter's bad, to confuse the heck out of kids.
Mm-hmm.
Who love it. If you want to explain your position, do so thoroughly. There's stuff on her website, but it's very confusing. So there are opportunities to make your platform known. This article is a step.
I think she should make a bunch of YouTube videos. That'd be fun.
I don't think she's a big YouTube fan, John.
She could be.
All right, what else should we discuss?
Oh, well, speaking of books, maybe it was, I don't know, but I thought this was kind of an amusing story. Here's kind of a lighthearted story. That a bunch of Potter books were actually stolen from a recycling center in Wales.
That's lighthearted?
Yes.
Well,
I wonder.
Because it's like they're trying to either save them from I don't know what, or it was the Death Eaters, I don't know.
Oh, like they were
it's
about
not.
To go into the chomper and they were saved?
Yeah. Why don't you recycle
First
all those
of all,
books?
Seriously, why are those... You think of any books in the world that weren't being recycled, it would be the Harry Potter books.
I know, and I don't know...
I mean, it's the little ones, the comic relief ones.
Right, which have raised literally millions of dollars, and they've done a lot of
sure.
good. I'm not sure if these are the hardback, because I know... Or these are the paperback, and they're out on hardback now. I'm not really sure what's happening there. I haven't been able to figure out why they were being recycled yet. I did actually email to find out, but haven't heard anything. But we'll update you once we find out more.
Awesome.
I don't know. It just seems kind of bizarre story and a little obscure, a little place in Wales. I just thought that was kind of, you know, interesting.
I think it'd be fun to use all those, like, books and just do something cool with them, like wallpaper, like a room in your house, or just staple them all to something. And, like, who else would have that room, the Fantastic Beasts and Creatures room?
Maybe it was Grop, your friend Grop, or somebody. I don't know. Tony Maudsley wanted it. Who knows?
Tony Maudsley would pay for that. Are you kidding?
Yeah, maybe.
You got a huge payday coming.
Tony Maudsley, for those who are listening for the first time, is the actor who's playing Grop in the upcoming.
Apparently he's the new Dawlish.
Yeah.
So.
No, and there's no such thing.
Okay.
He could be on par.
So I really like this story about the guys who lie about reading Harry Potter
yes.
to give the illusion. I thought they would lie about having not read Harry Potter so that they would seem cool, because there's that supposition, there's that idea that if you read Harry Potter, you're not cool.
Uh-huh.
Which
well, we know better,
false.
Certainly.
False, because clearly high.
I think you're only cool if you do read Harry Potter, personally.
Yep.
I run into people on the streets, and they say, hey, what's going on? I'll be like, hey, do you read Harry Potter? Right off the bat. And if they say no, I just keep on walking.
Serena Williams reads Harry Potter?
Yes, she
mm-hmm.
does. A great tennis champion. She's an excellent tennis player. And that, so it's nice when you see that these famous people are not ashamed of it.
My favorite part, though, was that Ben Affleck was reading the adult version.
Yes.
he was trying to be cooler about it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I saw also read Harry Potter is what's the girl's name? A little, Dakota Fanning.
Well,
big
I would hope
Harry
so.
Harry Potter fan. I forget where I saw that, but she was talking about how she cried when the big D died,
hmm.
which is sad.
Well, but I was amused that the books that this was part of a survey that had in the UK, and about the books that they lied about reading, that people lie and they say that to make them sound, I don't know if they're more well-read or whatever. They called it challenging literature, and I you know.
I love how War and Peace is on the same list as Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus.
Thank you. I know, it's just like the paradox there. I'm like, hello!
We got The Lord of the Rings, War and Peace, Wuthering Heights, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, 1984, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, Great Expectations, Jane Eyre, The Da Vinci Code, and The Diary of Anne Frank. Sue, how many have you read on that list?
I've actually read everything but Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. I've actually not read that.
How many Judy Blume books were on that
every
list?
Everyone has other ones, though.
I've read Lord of the Rings, Wuthering Heights, 1984, Philosopher's Stone, Jane Eyre, Da Vinci Code, and Diary of Anne Frank. I've not read Great Expectations, War and Peace, or Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. War and Peace, I'm sorry.
I read that Men Are From Mars book.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Somehow I'm not surprised.
I could better myself.
You only read the men part, not the women part.
Uh-huh. Oh, what's
you mean? Just said I read that Men Are From Mars book. Where's the women part?
No, I abbreviated the book title, Martha.
Well, you know, it's indicative. It's like sometimes a cigar is not a cigar.
Okay.
Well, here's another fun story. I guess, though, we're too old to enter this, but the BBC, CBBC, is running a new show called Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is kind of like a... you know, it's not Hogwarts the reality show that I want,
well,
but it's...
I shudder to ask, how are they determining? What do you do?
Oh, they put the sorting hat on your head.
No, but these are like children. You're going to go to like an actual, like a boarding school, and I don't know how they selected that there's contestants, but these children actually go and learn magic. They learn like different spells. They do herbology.
Those are tricks.
Well, magic tricks, but they learn, like, Latin and, you know, and that kind of thing. I mean, it's very, very eerily similar.
I mean,
they can shout Latin phrases and nothing happens.
This sounds like something that would give Laura Mallory a freaking coronary.
That would give her a car. Oh, my goodness, she would have an attack.
The BBC directly indoctrinating people into witchcraft. Like, no, it's a magician thing. They learn how to pull things out of hats and take quarters behind your ears.
Well, miss the part where the magic doesn't work.
Right. But they're doing stuff like chemistry and you know, like card tricks, you know, which are the basics part behind magic. But this was interesting. It said that they're going to learn how to care after the resident magic animals. So I want to know. Where exactly
what do they get their hands on? A few flubber worms, perchance?
Exactly. Good point, John. I don't know.
Magic bunnies.
That's it.
I don't know.
What's that rabbit? That's not tricks are for kids, but what's that rabbit? Isn't the other way he's pulling? I don't know.
The White Rabbit from Alice in Wonderland.
That's it.
Anyway, fun.
Fun. One more thing. One more new story. John Williams, the great, fabulous composer, said he was in an interview recently, and he said he misses scoring the Potter films.
I gotta say, I don't really miss him. Isn't that terrible? I think he's awesome. I think what he did was fantastic. But I really enjoy seeing all this new stuff come every movie.
Always for the sake of it being new?
You've loved every score since then.
Yeah.
You flipped out about the Goblet of Fire score. You couldn't stop talking
about it. A few of them. A few of the tracks.
Well, they've kept Hedwig's theme, which has become identifiable with the whole series, and I don't think that's going to go away. I'm looking forward to Nicholas Hooper, I believe is his name, who will be scoring.
Yeah.
And he works with David Yates, and people are asking, well, why didn't Mr. Williams come back? Well, I think it's just because David Yates has worked with Mr. Hooper for a long time.
David Yates.
A lot of people are
very
positive.
I heard this
about
Hooper
him.
Guy who does everything with a xylophone, all of his composing.
Does he?
This will be a very interesting score.
I was almost expecting, like, it's all going to be bagpipes or something obscure, but the xylophone
John Williams, not only left a fingerprint, he left a big fat handprint on it. I mean, it's his music echoed throughout the whole score, so we've got that, and that's great, but by the third, I was getting a little antsy, you know?
Well, I actually preferred the third score the most. I actually like that the best out of the three he did, but just because he varied it up a little bit. There's one track called A Window to the Past, which I think is really just lovely and it's a little bit different. But
I don't know. Nothing gets my gears moving than Harry's Wondrous World.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, nothing Nothing makes me more excited.
Yeah.
That's what I played on my way to the bookstore to pick up Half-Blood Prince.
Did you really?
In my car.
That's cool.
Just jamming. It's awesome.
I kind of like Dance with the Hippogriff, too, so, you know. I
can't wait till that song is probably going to be at the Yule Ball of Prophecy.
Oh,
and I'm gonna make them play it. I'm sure
yeah.
they'll play it 100 times.
We have to go dance with that. That'll be fun. Be awesome.
It's so funny. I'm gonna find somebody to crowd surf.
All right, well, let's tap dance on to the next next
Aww.
Section of this podcast.
Yes, it's finally time for our Fergie interview.
Fergie.
London.
I knew
you were going to do that. Fergus McGee, not Fergie.
Fergus
McGee has written a book that's getting compared to Harry Potter, apparently. And Doris talks to him about Harry, about his work, and life as an author, and all that stuff.
Very good.
Awesome.
Take it away, Big D.
In the Fan Corner, a one-on-one interview with a new lucky fan each week.
Not me, not Hermione, you.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the fan interview. This is Doris Herman from the Lounge, and I am here with Fergus McGee. Fergus is the author of Beyond the Mist, an awesome action adventure, hero's journey type of novel that he started writing, believe it or not, when he was 12 years old. It's published, and it's an incredible, and it has been called the next Harry Potter. You can also find his novel in our Cauldron Shop if you want to purchase it and have a read for yourself. Fergus, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's, of course, midday here, and it's really late at night for you.
Yeah.
Fergus, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your novel.
Yeah.
Mainly because the thing that drew me to it is that I'd heard it called The Next Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I have to read this. And while it's nothing like Harry Potter, it has that same excitement, that same level of interest, and that ability to really relate to a character. And to connect with characters, and I think that's one of the things most people will find that they like about your novels. You're younger than most authors, though.
That's true.
And I really found it amazing. You started this book when you were 12.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you explain exactly how the journey of writing your first novel started?
Well, I'd never really written anything serious in my own time before that. Although I'd always really enjoyed creative writing at school. And I just suddenly felt the urge one day to write, and so I jotted down the prologue, which lays the foundation for the story. And the prologue is really the one part that survives my own editing process, you know, largely intact. But yeah, from that point on, I came up with the basic plot quite quickly, especially the ending. And once you've got an ending, I think, you can work towards it however you want, adding bits in here and there. And I just kept adding a few hundred words on every so often, mainly during school holidays, until I actually gave up three-quarters of the way through. And I just kind of lost interest, really. But then I stumbled across it last year, and I thought, you know, why not complete it? You know, I put all this work into this, so why don't I just finish it off? And so I did.
Awesome. I know, when I ordered the book, I started reading it, and I read it completely through in one night. It's one of those books that you just don't want to stop reading. And to a large extent, it was because of your character, Sharon. I liked her as a character. All of the characters are very well built, very interesting. Their characterization has a lot of depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come up with her character, and is she based on a real person?
Well, she's a very deep character. She's very determined and inquisitive, and a little shy sometimes. So she's quite like me in a way, I suppose. Not really intentionally, though, and not totally. I suppose it's quite hard to write about this one person so much without imprinting part of yourself on her. But she's not really based on a real person. She's very individual, really. And I think it's probably best when your characters are like this. I mean, I know there are some characters. I mean, look at David Copperfield. Some characters are based on their authors and their lives. But I chose a girl instead of a boy so that it would soften the amount of action going on, I think, and it's already very action-packed, and so Sharon acts as a sort of check to that, I suppose. It kind of tones it down a bit, I think.
Good. You know, it was such a fascinating book. I have to ask you before we go on, are you going to write any other books? Is there a plan? Are you already in the writing? Or what's your next step?
I've had a few ideas. And if you read the book, you'll know there are some unexplained references and some loose ends in it. So these could form parts of sequels, but I don't really have any exact plans yet. I mean, I don't know if it'll be a trilogy, a quadrilogy, or whatever. At the moment, I'm just focusing on the next one, really, so I've got a couple of ideas there.
One thing, and I want to talk about your characters. I found them very interesting. There's a lot of depth to the character. And like J.K. Rowling, you like to take the character's name and really use a name that has more depth to it than just your normal, average, everyday name. Yeah. Apnar, and these are just fascinating names. Where did you get them from?
Well, I mean, I just love coming up with names. I'm already drawing up a list of possible names for future books right now, actually. I mean, I like unusual, quirky names, mainly. But many of them do have a lot of significance in them, and I like that underlying meaning in books. If you look more closely, you'll see sort of subtle hints in the names. And I think that's one of the great features of Harry Potter, all the meanings behind the names. And there's a lot of meaning behind the names in of my characters, too. I mean, if you look at Sophios, for example, that comes from the Greek for wise, and he's very wise, or Stultitia, from the Latin for stupid, and the capital city, Sulla, comes from the Roman emperor, Sulla, too. So there's a lot of classical influences there. I mean, you can look at Uncle Cyrus. He's quite a bumbling old chap, so his head's always up in the clouds, and Cyrus is a type of cloud, so... But, I mean, I can't deny that some of them just come straight off the top of my head, like Apnar and his father Nogard. They just sort of came to me, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sharon falls into what she thinks is another world, and I don't want to go into a lot of detail about anything that might give spoilers away to the book, but this world has its own vocabulary, like septate, which is a week, or other things. Did you think of those as you wrote? Did you in advance say, okay, I'm going to call this? How does that happen?
Well, quite often I think of lots of alternative words that we could use to describe things. And I love coining my own words. I remember in my first year at senior school, my English teacher told me off for making up my own word and using it in a piece of writing. And I think, it's because I took Latin, and so I loved using the Latin to make English words. And I think the word was calidio, from the Latin calidus, which means clever. I said something like, he made a collidial leap, meaning he made a skillful, cunning leap, you know. And I mean, Shakespeare made up words. I thought, why can't I? Now, I know I'm not exactly in the same league as him, but it's something that I enjoy doing, and it really is great fun. So, I usually think of them in advance, though, and then just find places to put them in.
I found that fascinating. I know that, Lord of the Rings has its own language, and to a large extent, Harry Potter has its own language, and it's really another way to sort of draw you into the book. And now I've had a few students read the book, and they'll walk around and they use some of the phrases, and I chuckle when they do. It makes the book endearing, and it makes you feel like you're sort of in on something that somebody else doesn't know anything about. So, and the food choices. Now that was something that was really interesting. You're a teenage boy, so food is a huge, important thing in your life. I cannot imagine eating mosquito wings, but the way you described them, it was fascinating. How did you come up with what these people eat? Because they don't eat what we eat.
No. I actually had a book of rare words that I found in the shop, and it's from that I got a few of the food ideas, like the mosquito wings. The word was galinipper, and I thought, oh, I've got to put that in somewhere. And the Ningguid ichthyarchic arrangement translation, freezing seafood. But some of them were just totally my own ideas, like camel's tail and bluebell cheese, just things you'd really not expect to eat.
Most writers feel like there have been people that have influenced them. Who are some of your favorite writers that may have influenced you along the way?
Well, I love classics, so I would say Charles Dickens has probably influenced me most. He's my favourite novelist, and I like that Victorian style of writing. Not that I copy it very faithfully. And I think J.K. Rowling's probably come closest to matching his art of plot writing and the sort of the crafting of stories. I think a lot of modern writing has become so minimalist, so stark, and I think it's really missing out on a lot. And I also enjoyed C.S. Lewis a lot, which obviously has the Christian message of self-sacrifice, and I think it's those difficult decisions and the sort of harsh realities which really make books interesting.
Okay. You've told me that you're a fan of Harry Potter. What is your favorite Harry Potter book?
Well, I've read them all. But I would say my favorite would be book 6, because it was just so shocking, really. But I also really enjoyed book 5. Book 4, I've actually not quite finished, because I bought it on the day it came out and everything, and I just gave up three-quarters of the way through because I just felt it was a bit too planned for me. I mean, there was the Triwizard Tournament, and each task would come along. And I think I prefer, you know, surprises, twists and turns in the story, which is why I like the first three much more, although I really think I should go back to it now.
Mm-hmm. The seventh Harry Potter book, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, will be out. Well, we don't know when it'll be out, but we know the title, or hopefully it'll be out soon. Do you have any predictions for the book?
Well, I have to say, I'm a supporter of the theory that Harry is the final Horcrux, that Voldemort mistakenly, or deliberately, left a piece of himself in Harry when he tried to kill him. So that would mean Harry would have to die in order for Voldemort to be completely defeated. So maybe he'll find out and sacrifice himself for everyone else's sake. And again, that would be a bit of Christian symbolism, I suppose. Or Harry lets Voldemort finally kill him, but in the process, the Dark Lord kills himself unwittingly. Of course, he could finally defeat Voldemort, but die himself in the process. So I hope I'm wrong, and you know, I probably am because I'm not really very good at divination, but you never know.
Yes, most of us do not have the inner eye.
No.
Going back to the sacrifice, Sophius, in your novel, is very wise and protective, and he makes a very difficult decision at the end of the book. I don't want to give it away. I'm just going to leave it at that. Did you find that it's hard to write?
Well, he is the great figure of good in the story, the real moral figurehead. So it was difficult to face up to the kind of decision he has to make and to write the kind of ending that I did. But in the end, he really had to do what he had to do, no matter what that meant. But was it ethical what he did? Well, that all depends on what really happened, doesn't it? But I won't give away any more than that. So.
No, we don't want to give it away. I find that interesting, and I wanted to mix that in with a little bit of our discussion on Harry Potter, because I know that Jo said it was difficult for her to write the death of Sirius, and I wonder what it would be like for her to sit down and have to write the death of other major characters in this book. We know she said that two people are going to die. If you're attached to a character, I wonder, you know, and I can't imagine that you're not attached to the characters. What is it like to write something that you know would hurt the character, or that the character would have to make that same moral decision that Sophia's had to make? Was that difficult for you to write when Sophia's had to make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to write, but I suppose if you've planned it, you know, right from the beginning, then it does make it easier. So you know what you're working towards. But yeah, you do become attached to the characters, and so it is difficult to not to sort of empathize with them.
Mm-hmm. And in Half-Blood Prince, Snape has to kill Dumbledore, or kills Dumbledore for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of speculation about Snape and Dumbledore, and that maybe they had a vow to keep Harry alive no matter what. Do you have any opinion on Snape's real reason for killing Dumbledore?
Well, I mean, I think the vow thing could be right, but I don't really know if there's much evidence for it, is there? I mean, I just think Snape killed Dumbledore to fulfill his unbreakable vow regarding Malfoy, and it was either him or Dumbledore, and he was basically a coward. But I know that doesn't really give much weight to Dumbledore's repeated trust in Snape, so, you know, maybe there is something deeper in that. I really don't know.
Okay. I've read several reviews of your book, and your book is being called The Next Harry Potter, mainly because of the depth of characterization and because it kind of has that that feel to it that when you've read it, you want more. Knowing the popularity of Rowling and of her hero, how does it make you feel to hear people say that about you and your novel?
Well, I mean, it's very flattering, but I mean, it's quite an honor to be compared in that way, to be compared to the greatest storyteller of our age. It is gratifying, but I hope it doesn't make my head too big.
Oh, I'm sure that it wouldn't. That it would be quite, I would think, quite an honor to be compared to her that way. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me.
That's all right.
And the book, Beyond the Mist, as I said, is available on Amazon.com. And you can also go to our Cauldron Shop if you would like to purchase it. It is an awesome read. I know I read it, and several of my students have, and have really enjoyed it. Thank you, Fergus.
Thank you.
And now it's time for Canon Conundrums, featuring Steve Vanderark from the Harry Potter Lexicon. Listen in as our panel tries to figure out one specific issue from the Harry Potter canon.
Who could possibly figure that out?
And we're back with Canon Conundrums, 74.
Yay!
Canon,
yay! Wow.
Thunderous applause. And there was great rejoicing.
Everybody's so excited.
Yeah.
Well, Stu had to step out and check the cookies she's making. And,
Stu, it's totally making cookies. There's always cookies going on in the Stu household.
Yes. Well, Jason and Steve, of course, arrived just a second ago into the Pottercast studios for the segment.
I guess I should be squeeing
more. Welcome, guys.
Squee.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
got some serious squeeage to make up for there.
Yes. She is in the green room kitchen making the Pottercast cookies.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Okay.
But what will we be talking about in this Canon Conundrum 74 that I've been looking forward to all week?
Let's talk about Snape.
Ooh.
Seriously. Yes, we never talk about Snape.
Novel idea. No one talks about him.
We really, really don't.
We actually, for him being the Canon Conundrum, we talk about him surprisingly little in Canon Conundrums.
Well, see, my question is, does anybody actually keep track of, you know, what we've talked about? Because, I mean, maybe we have already, but maybe everybody has forgotten, you know?
If we don't remember, then nobody else remembers.
There you go. Yeah.
Somebody needs to make a Pottercast lexicon.
Yes. Aren't we in the lexicon yet, Steve? I think we need our own section.
Well, divert all of your resources. Well, actually, you
divert
know, we
all
do
all lexicons
have the,
resources.
We do have the Muggle Encyclopedia, which lists all the actors and all that kind of stuff. We should really have Pottercast in there and Mugglecast and all those things and the people's names that are in it and everything. It should all be in there. So, yeah, it's a good idea.
We don't matter next to those people.
Because, you know, I got nothing else to do, so.
I know. Divert all your resources to the only thing that's important right now.
Oh, my goodness, all the great, incredible things we're working on right now.
I heard you've been sleeping like 3 hours a night.
What about Snape are we talking about here?
Okay, here's one.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
This is very
all right.
Specific.
What do we think Snape's Boggart and his Patronus are?
Now, Joe said that it would give away so much information that it's important.
Right.
It's very important.
Boggart and Patronus is important, or just...
Well, she was asked the question what they would both be, and she said it would give away so much information that she couldn't answer the question.
Okay.
Which isn't too surprising.
No.
You know, it's interesting. I just have to say that in writing, it's very important to show what your characters fear most and what they want most, and she was just so clever. Mm-hmm. About this. The Boggart being what you fear most is a very simple and quick manifestation of that.
Mm-hmm.
The Patronus isn't what you want most, but it's what is your protector or something about your personality. And then the Mira Rivera said tells you what you want most. It's just these very clever devices.
Not only that, but it comes from the source of a Patronus is happiness, so...
No, I mean, it's a happy memory is the source, but the manifestation, but we're talking about what the manifestation of Snape's Patronus is, which is different.
Right.
I mean, the source of Harry's happiness isn't a stag, you know?
No, right. But I guess now that you bring that up, though, if you think about it, Harry's Patronus is a stag, which is certainly an important emotional, psychological image for him. So then we can assume can we assume that it's true of everybody's Patronus, that it's a important psychological image?
No, I don't think so.
Well, Hermione has an otter.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of the ones we've learned about don't seem on the surface like the swan that Cho makes. I mean, I don't know if that, you know, maybe you could say that maybe there's some reason, but
swans make Cho
really
very
apparent.
Happy.
And, And what about Ron's was like a little dog or something?
I love that Ron's right. a little dog.
It's a Jack Russell.
It's a little yip-yip dog that's going to... Yeah. So Jack Russell.
Jack Russell.
But the little yip-yip dog that's going to chase the Dementors away. Oh, I love it. I want that fan art.
And that doesn't
Jack
seem
Russell
to,
Terrier patrol chasing the Dementors away. Somebody do it, please.
You know, just a side note, though. I mean, do you work on the spell and, like, you spend ages learning to do this great spell, and then you're going to do the spell, and you do it for the first time, and what if you get a really dumb animal? Wouldn't that be embarrassing?
For real.
You know?
Isn't that, like, the same kind of thing, like, when you're learning how to be, like, an animagus, and you're... And, like, you can't control what animal you're going to do. It's like you practice so long and hard on that transfiguration, and bam, you're a turtle.
That's what Jo said. She was always afraid that she would put effort into it, and she'd end up a cockroach. She said it would be horribly embarrassing.
And there you'd stand as a turtle or a cockroach going, oh, no. Oh, I don't believe this. I'm not going to tell
anyone.
So then, is Snape's, you know, Patronus? Is it like a penguin or something? Snape's Patronus, the penguin, the waddling after the Dementors. I'm sorry. Here we go again. So what is it? What do we think? Boggart, what's he afraid of? Oh, so are we? Is the idea then that if we know what he's afraid of, we would know if he was good or if he was bad?
See, the idea I mean, you're gonna know if he's good or bad based on what he's afraid of, you know?
Right.
Or you're gonna know his motivations based on what he's afraid of. So it's really unanswerable without answering the Snape question, the big Snape question.
Mm-hmm. I know. I mean, it's like if he's good, would his Boggart be like Voldemort, being like, "Aha! I caught you. I know the truth. Now I'm gonna hurt you with something." Or would it be Dumbledore being, "Aha! I know the truth. You're not good. You're bad Snape. Bad Snape." And he's looking disappointed and sad.
Maybe his Boggart is something more personal. Like, you know, I don't want to say like less significant, but you know, not like which side will win. But you know, it might have to do with, you know, one individual like Harry or, you know, or Dumbledore or someone like that, or you know,
Lily.
You know, it's like harm coming to them, or Lily, like, you know, or him, like, failing them, or, you know,
it's funny, I don't even imagine him being afraid,
like,
of
Snape,
something.
I'm sure, is afraid of...
Of what?
Yeah, I mean, like, he's, you know, he's very conscious, like, of not being, you know, found out.
Well, that's, okay.
Or, you know, I don't know, like, not having anyone really know what he's up to.
Right.
But, you know, I think what he fears most are, like, sort of deeper feelings, like, you know, people... getting too close, almost, like, you know, when he rails at Tonks about, you know, how, like, her Patronus shows that she's weak because it, like, kind of betrays, like, her feelings, you know, I guess I'm getting on the Patronus now when we're talking about Boggart, but still, you know, it's, they kind of all tied up together, like, it's, he doesn't like people to know, like, what is most important to him, because they can use it against him. He's probably learned that from Voldemort if he didn't know it already.
And, of course, we know what Snape's worst memory is. Does that connect up somehow? You know? Humiliation?
That's interesting. Like, that's just the title that you
That's true.
Right?
Yeah, I guess we don't technically know
is that really
his
worst memory.
But it gives us an insight into what is he so afraid of or so embarrassed of, or what is it? What made him take that thought out of his mind, out of all the thoughts that he would have had
Snape,
to do that with?
Right.
I think Snape's biggest fear that we've seen throughout the books and we can identify is vulnerability and cowardice. So I would think that his Boggart would be something that could turn him into that, or something, or showing him as that, you know? I don't know what that would be, but...
Mm-hmm. No, right, but that's, I think you're right. If you look at the Snape's Worst Memory chapter, for example, or at the end of, you know, running out of Hogwarts and Harry calls him a coward, and you know, that flips him out more than anything else. He finally loses it at that point.
Look at this position that he's put himself in. Whether or not he's good or evil, he has played one of two gigantic sides, or both sides, so against each other that we, having that third person or limited third person view, still can't figure it out. So he's playing these people against each other just so that he's not vulnerable.
Right.
It's sort of amazing the lengths that he's taken to protect himself and to protect himself from being taken advantage of.
Right. So, again, I agree with you, Melissa, it's kind of hard to guess, okay, what would the Patronus be out of that, or what would the Boggart be out of that?
Well, the boggart, yeah, I'm not sure what it would manifest as.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a hard question. Like, all these ideas are very...
I'm kind of liking the penguin idea myself, but okay.
Penguins are brave.
Well, for the boggart or Patronus or both.
Deep seated fear of penguins.
I'm very happy with a penguin. I just think it's interesting with the boggart, so how in book 3, we see all these things happening. And the lesson with Lupin, with all the things that the kids are afraid of, like spiders and Jack in the Box or the hell it is. And then in book 5, you see Molly's boggart, and it's, you know, something so personal. It's, you know, it's like her family.
Right.
You suppose that that kind of shows us that the boggart changes as people's lives change? It makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. It had to have for her kids to be in it.
Right. I mean, they're going to be afraid of fright, you know, scary movie kinds of things. But then when they get to be adults, you know, when you're an adult, you're more afraid of, you know, your family being in danger, things like that. It's a true fear.
I wonder if an Occlumens, like, that same sort of power and skill could, like, keep a boggart from being able to detect, like, their deepest fear. If you could kind of trick the boggart a little bit.
Maybe a skilled Occlumens could find out what a boggart looks like.
That's possible.
You know?
I'm going to say that no one has ever seen the true form of a boggart, though,
Moody?
Because it always changes depending on...
So there's a popular theory that Moody knows what... Well, we don't know, but there's a popular theory that Moody knows what one looks like because he rolled his eye up and saw it in the grimoire place. It could have turned into something when he looked at it. It could have felt it on him.
Yeah, he's still looking at it.
But it might... But, right, it might have turned into something. We don't know that he knows what its full... You know, what its true form is. Not that it matters, really.
I think we can assume that a boggart is not, like, totally a, you know, it doesn't operate by scientific rules. It knows that it's being looked at because that's what a boggart is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, does it exist, like, apart from...
It won't even have a shape otherwise.
It's kind of like a tree falls in the forest, like, if there's no one around to,
exactly.
Interact with the boggart, does it really exist at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, just be like this wispy.
You know
thing.
What I'm curious about? The other members of the Order would definitely have seen Snape's Patronus.
Right.
And that is a very telling statement about a person that I don't think you can fake.
Yeah, exactly.
So they might have some.
Well, because they use the Patronus to communicate with each other.
I mean, what if he's just always avoided using it somehow?
It's a very vulnerable thing.
I imagine that that's not possible.
He's a penguin, and he just doesn't like when people snicker.
But, I mean, if they use these Patronuses to communicate with each other, it's got to be... You know, what if someone has a very slow Patronus, you know, like a penguin or a turtle or
Slush.
A flubber worm? I mean, it'd be very poor communication.
Come the battle's on, all done. Here
we
comes the turtle walking up.
In the well.
There's going to be a fight.
Yeah.
This is my protector. Just don't walk around him, please.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know, like, I would imagine that because a Patronus is meant to be some sort of protector, they probably
have
to be sort of capable.
So the Patronus can shape-shift from its corporal form to its, you know, wispy kind of form, and it can travel as fast as it needs to in the wispy form.
Like, even Ron's, you know, like, the little dog doesn't seem fierce or anything, but I bet it can kind of, like, fly around.
Yeah, because
my impression from...
I mean, what if you have to contact somebody who's in, like, an upstairs area of somewhere? Like, the little dog can't jump up, you know.
My impression from Prisoner of Azkaban is that they move... They don't really touch the... my impression of that stands...
Yeah, they don't really touch the ground.
It kind of floats across the ground.
Yeah, they're just kind of...
But you're right. I mean, a Jack Russell Terrier or a Krupp, I guess, is not going to be a particularly scary or intimidating or triumphant-looking Patronus. Well, I guess neither would a swan, I guess, or an otter, but...
Right.
Yeah, the otter. I would love to see the otter fighting a
power.
Dementor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I bet in a situation...
Well, you know, on the other hand, I've seen Holy Grail, and that killer rabbit is, killer. So, you know,
I don't even know so much if Dementors can even recognize physical shapes anyway, as much as they sense that the presence of a soul or sense the presence of a Patronus. So it doesn't really matter what it looks like to them.
I think you're right. I think Patronus's form is incidental to its function. It's an interesting manifestation from the person, but a Patronus is going to do what a Patronus does.
It's like
not like an animagus where... they're actually, like, when they're in that form, they're limited to, like, whatever that animal can
do. The question of what Snape's Boggart and Patronus are. I'm sorry, we're just so far. Everybody listening knows what a Boggart and Patronus is. They have their own ideas, and it's not the focus of this, you know, of this section.
But ours are right.
So, Snape's Boggart, what he's afraid of? Man, you know, in the it doesn't have to be like a it can be kind of a thing. That's where it really gets wide open. But I think,
yeah, like a situation, like Hermione is with, like McGonagall telling her something.
So
specific.
So him being found out would make sense by whichever side, you know, or somehow, you know, being utterly humiliated in front of who? Staff, students, you know. Again, I'm latching kind of back onto the maybe, worst memory thing.
But. Yeah.
I mean, it could be a bunch of kids
like where he's
laughing at him for God's sake.
I think it would have been in that memory. But
him hanging upside down in his gray underwear. I don't know. I think, like, in addition to what we've kind of said, you know, he doesn't like to be humiliated or, like, be thought of as a coward. I think he doesn't... I get the feeling that he hates being, like, unappreciated for, like, what he does, if he is, you know.
That's a good idea.
I don't know, I get the, you know, I guess, because I kind of think that he is, you know, on the Order's side, and that he hates the fact that, like, nobody thinks, like, nobody realizes what horrible things he has to do and how, like, hard he works. And I think that really rankles him, and, like, when he almost got the, what was that, like, Order of Merlin or something, and then it got taken away, and he was so
mad. That's right.
Like, flipped out, you know.
I forgot about that, that's true.
I mean, I think... You know, obviously there was a lot going on because he was also just like, you know, he was seeing like these other people that he hated and wanted to get even with. But I think in addition to that, you know, it was like this like tantalizing hint that he was getting some kind of recognition and then it was taken away.
Well, he really lost it at that point, too. I mean, that's another one of those places where
you... Yeah.
I think it's kind of telling that that would be something that would he would be actually excited about and disappointed about to lose.
Yeah.
The fact that it's an
kind
award that, you know, the ministry gives... To people who do good.
And who help
I'm
Muggle.
I'm sure sad little Snape, like...
Specifically that Order of Merlin.
Putting it on his little shelf.
Maybe his big fear is that his life will go unremarked. That he will gain no appreciation of what he's done on either side, whether he's good or bad.
Yeah. I guess it could be like his gravestone and, like, nobody there.
What kind of fits the profile, kind of fits the picture of this person.
I know a lot of people who will go and visit it.
Yeah. Well, the scenarios of the world.
Okay.
What about Patronus?
So have we answered it?
Patronus is
tough. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I don't know about answering.
I don't know that we've answered it, but...
I'm big on the penguin idea.
Like we said, it's... He couldn't keep it a secret from the rest of the Order.
He could not keep it a secret. And so...
So I don't know how it could be a telling thing for anybody.
Well, maybe other people just don't think to look at it. You know? Nobody... I mean we've all questioned...
Do you think it's possible that he hasn't had to use it?
No. I don't know. Maybe not.
That's possible.
Well, then again, they all used it really most intensely during the last war. And he only came into that group at the end of the last war. Really not even until it was almost over.
Yeah.
And then they really have been dormant, and he's been near Dumbledore, so what has he really had to do? So maybe he hasn't used it.
But,
right.
No, I mean, in Phoenix, they remember Dumbledore saying how, you know, it's like you should have contacted the Order if you wanted to figure things out with Snape, or you should have asked Snape, because Snape has ways to communicate with the Order a lot faster than any flu network. So obviously that says that Snape has, you know, is in this, in the loop of the people that use the Patronuses to communicate with each other.
Well, here's my, I mean, if we as people, quote unquote, observing all these events, have questioned whether Snape was acting on Dumbledore's orders, and none of the other Order members, or Harry, or anyone so far, have questioned that, it's possible they also missed the significance of his Patronus as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. But
what is it?
Then it would have to be... Something,
is a snake too obvious?
I mean, it couldn't be, like, something so obvious. Unless it's something that would be obvious to us because of information we have that other Order members don't.
What if it's Dumbledore?
Is this Patronus?
You know,
can your Patronus be a person?
I don't know.
I was wondering about that. What if it was hairy? Like,
oh, yeah.
That'd be almost as embarrassing as a penguin, wouldn't it?
How much would that piss off Snape? Like, yeah. A little hairy going around, like, beating up the Dementors for him.
Well, who has protected Snape? It could be Dumbledore. Honestly, it could be a phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what people are saying.
I don't know. I think Dumbledore's the only one with a phoenix.
Don't you think that would be...
Do we know if Dumbledore's Patronus is a phoenix, or was Dumbledore one of the other characters that Joe couldn't give us information of?
All we heard was that it was a ghostly bird.
It's like a bird.
It was a bird, and I think it's logical that it was a phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah.
We all say that, so knowledgeably.
Is this one that Joe said that... Didn't Joe say that she couldn't tell us about Dumbledore's Bogart or Patronus?
I think we asked Bogart, but not Patronus.
Was it just Snape?
I think we asked Bogart about Dumbledore, but not Patronus.
And Erised too.
I think people already Erised, kind of
Bogart and Erised.
Boy, this is this nice little list of everybody's got their Erised image, their Bogart, their Patronus, their. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it tells you a lot about each character. It's almost like
it
a text.
Okay, what about like the Snape Lily theory? Like, is there anything about Lily that could relate to his Patronus that would be sort of a giveaway for those that would know?
Was Lily an animagus?
Not that we know of.
I
do we
have
any knowledge of that?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, because the whole time turning themselves into animagi, she wasn't keen on James yet. That wasn't until seventh year that she started going out with him. So.
Even then, I doubt if she would have been running around with those guys. But
Well, what about the school that the Patronus isn't somebody that's protected you, but just says something about your character? Then what can we assign to Snape? Right, it's sort of like the demons in the Harry Potter series.
Snake sounds like a snake to me, Patronus. Or a bat. Okay, can we just do bat?
Something that would.
I thought it could have been a bat.
Yeah.
I think everybody thinks it could have been a bat.
Something that reveals something about their character.
Yeah, he's called a bat so much.
Oh, that was uniquely my theory. No one else.
Chuck.
What about, like, an acromantula?
Oh, that'd be cool, though. If it's like, what's his name? Eragog running around with all his eyeballs.
Well, no matter which side...
I mean, a lot of people compare Snape to spiders.
He's deceptive, so no matter which side he's on... His Patronus, I think, if his Patronus is something that characterizes him, would be an animal practicing deception.
A snake would be so cool.
Maybe his Patronus is a boggart.
Whoa.
His boggart is his Patronus.
Oh.
That's a little...
Inversion theory.
Now my brain hurts.
Jason.
And then I looked in a mirror, and then another mirror was behind it. And everything exploded.
Very tricksy.
Okay.
Yeah, I like
that. I'm kind of freaking out, guys.
About something kind of shape-shifty, and which is why I thought of Bogart. But
in book 3, he gets up and leaves the room when he hears there's going to be a Bogart lesson, which, you
demonstration,
know...
Demonstration, yeah.
I think that a spy might want to know that information about Harry, about anyone.
Hmm.
Either it was Joe getting him out of the room because it would be too much information... Or it was Snape just really not caring. Or Snape not wanting to show anybody what his boggart is.
That's really interesting.
Maybe. I mean, but he wouldn't necessarily think that. Because, I mean, even Lupin, like, his didn't show up until he, kind of stepped in the way.
Anything can happen. I mean, you just want to get yourself out of Dodge, you know?
Yeah, I guess you want to be safe, yeah. That's true. I'm sure Snape wouldn't want, like, anyone to see his Bogart, no matter what it was.
I think you're right.
Because he's Snape.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, he plays
any adult,
real close
it's a vulnerable, to his chest. It's more of a vulnerable thing. It's just, you know, as for any adult, your fears have sort of cemented, whereas, like you said, Steve, when you're a kid, it's the gory thing that's coming out of the closet to eat you, you know?
I just, one thing, this is too off topic. Never mind.
We're not off topic.
Because we never go off topic.
I just wonder,
there,
like,
Jason.
You know... Right. Well, like, it seems like everybody knew what their Bogart was going to be, and I just wonder, like, if it just, you know, if, is that really their deepest fear, or is the Bogart just sort of, like, seeing what they think, like, what they're thinking about at the moment, you know, like, because they're sort of focusing on what they think they're afraid of, so the Bogart kind of grabs that.
So if someone didn't know what a Bogart was and looked at it without their worst fear in mind, they wouldn't see... Like if they were thinking about like a sandwich, it
doesn't seem like it would work.
So then if Lupin wouldn't have told the kids, okay, think what your worst fear is, Basically saying, okay, now we know it's...
Wouldn't it be funny if Lupin said, this thing will show you the thing that you love the most, and they'll get all excited and they'll look at it and they'll get scared to pieces. That'd be the funniest lesson ever.
If I was Snape, that's what I'd do.
I'd freak people out. If I were Snape, I don't know if I would know. Like, does he know what his worst fear is? I mean, I think that's hard for people to decide on, and it, you know, it seems kind of easy for the kids, because they're kids, I guess, they have sort of maybe simpler fears, but...
My Bogart is...
It's funny, the part that I think is strange about the Bogarts is that it, you know, supposedly looks however, whatever your worst fear is. I don't understand the part where whoever's, closest to it is the form that it sees, and how can other people see other people's Bogarts?
Well, it has to.
That's weird.
I think it has to see you.
Get the Bogart's attention. I don't understand.
I think it has to see you.
So then,
you.
If that's the case, then how can Moody see a Bogart that's changed if the Bogart does not have Moody's attention?
I don't think it has to see you. I think it just senses the attention. See what happens if you blindfold a Bogart? Then he wouldn't know.
Blindfold a Bogart. Put a pillowcase over his head. I don't know.
That's the Bogart's Bogart.
That's the Bogart's Bogart.
That's the blindfold.
Are we closing on our final thoughts here?
Final thoughts. We've gotten really sort of metaphysical.
Penguin.
Initial thoughts.
What is a Bogart's Bogart is a show note.
Oh, man. There's another whole Canon Conundrums right
there. Bogart's Bogart.
Maybe when we do the parody edition.
All right. Are we doing our...
So are we wrapping this thing up?
Okay, who wants to start?
I think that Snape Patronus is a moose.
Sorry. I did not mean to scoff
because
at your answer there, John.
Is a little, let me spoil you. A little larger than a stag, and the moose could probably take the stag, and that would make Snape very happy.
Okay, well, that makes some sense, John. You're scaring me.
So I'm going to go with a moose.
Okay.
Big old antlers.
Intimidating, too, for the old mentors.
The moose. Yes, it would be, quite.
Very little scarier than a glowing moose trotting at you.
Yes. I'm going to guess his Bogart is a very, very happy Harry getting the Order of Merlin, first class, shaking hands with everybody else important, and just being the happiest Harry he could possibly be, and that would just totally tick off Snape and scare the crap out of him, because that's just one thing that would make Snape the most unhappy Snape.
I'm going to say that his Bogart is having his true intentions and all his essence just shown to people. I'm still trying to think how that would, how that would manifest. I think it's him being very vulnerable. So I don't know.
Exposed.
I keep trying to think how
Naked
that would
Snape.
Manifest. Naked Snape. Let's please not put that in my choice on the poll.
You.
Thank you.
Also, thanks to the Naked Snape.
No, I need mental tools.
That's terrible. Oh, God, it's awful.
You would win. You would win.
I think it would be important people in his life having full comprehension of what he is. So maybe Dumbledore looking at him with full knowledge, or Voldemort looking at him with full knowledge. I think that would put him in a very, you know, significant spot. As for Patronus, I think I'm going to go with Snake. I like it.
Snake.
Because he is a snake. Whether no matter what side he's on, he's a snake.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think as Patronus, I'm going to go, I would love to say Penguin, because I just think it's great fun, but I'm going to go Bat, just because it just seems to fit. Maybe that's sort of an easy answer, but I just think that his Patronus is going to be a Bat. And then, as far as the Bogart goes, wow, that's really tough. Melissa, I think you're on the right track there, but like you, I can't quite figure out what it would actually be. I think that, again, looking at the worst memory thing, I think it's humiliation and exposure of, you know, I think that's what it would be. Now, what form that would take, I'm not quite sure, but I think it'd be something along those lines. That seems the most in character for him. So,
all right.
Well, this has been very conclusive.
Well,
Jason?
What do you think, Melissa?
I'm sorry to hear what she thought.
Me and Steve. No, I'm saying me and Steve have been very, very concise.
I know.
But,
Well, okay.
That's right. We even actually almost agreed. Like, we don't usually do that.
I don't know what I think his Patronus is, but I think it, you know, like we've sort of talked about it, it reveals his loyalty, like, in a somewhat obvious way. Maybe not even a way that we're aware of yet, but that, like, if we knew the Patronus beforehand, then as we were reading Book 7, it would give away the ending too soon. Something, it's going to relate to, like, someone or something that has happened before that he, you know, kind of is part of the reason why Dumbledore trusts him, I think. I have no idea what that animal would be. I don't think it's a phoenix, but it's an interesting possibility.
Do you think it's a moose?
And it's Boggart. No, I don't think it's a moose, but I think it should be.
Bullwinkle.
Honestly, I was being facetious when I said his Boggart would be his Patronus, but, you know, kind of along those lines, I mean, anything that his Boggart is, you know, much like what Melissa and Steve were saying, he doesn't want people to know his inner being, yeah, like, right, his inner self. And so, mm-hmm, you know, just him being, like, sort of revealed and all his layers peeled away, that's not what he wants.
Now you're getting, close to my body.
Very good.
Snape with all his layers peeled away.
There you go. That sounds that's like Melissa's naked Snape.
Yeah, the naked Snape is split pretty evenly among the fandom as either people's boggarts or their mirrors of Erised.
I think you're right. All right. Yep. Well, we forgot to announce it last week, so at the end of this Canon Conundrums, I want to say congratulations to our own Jason, who just got engaged.
Jason!
Really?
Guru is engaged!
Well, congratulations!
You'll get married! You're getting married!
Thank you.
So just another
we shouldn't
regular
all sound so surprised, should we? That's kind of rude.
A regular
and I
Charlie
guess
and Tonks.
Yeah.
Is she a fan?
It's pretty cool. Yeah, she's actually, well, it's a leaky marriage, I guess.
I didn't want to say it until you said it, because
yeah, I wasn't wondering about it.
She said it.
I'm just hoping that, you know, she likes Harry Potter, yeah, otherwise, you know.
It's
off,
a leaky marriage, they live in a lounge. Oh, yes, it's like, this appeals to my matchmaker inside, I'm just so happy. I told him I had to be a bridesmaid.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So, I'm going to be the ring bearer.
You're going to be the ring bearer. Are you short and you have hairy feet?
And I have a bear costume.
Don't ask that question.
The ring bearer.
Hey, can we plan your wedding?
Oh, my God. Hey, you know what I smell? I smell these cookies about done here. I think Sue is probably up on her way up there.
Good. I'll get the milk.
Best of the show. Okay.
Okay, bye, guys.
You're welcome to it.
All right.
Later,
take care.
Boys.
Bye.
Later.
And it's the end. Woohoo!
Oh, it's the end.
It's the end. What do we have to talk about?
Conundruming.
That was a little bit.
Sue, how are the cookies?
I have. You know what my favorite cookies are? Are oatmeal butterscotch.
Oatmeal butterscotch. Is that what you made for us? I thought I smelled butterscotch.
I like them. They're really good. They're just, you know, not just your boring plain old oatmeal, but a little with butterscotch in it. Oh, it's wonderful. Yummy.
I like oatmeal chocolate chip.
But those are good.
That's a little boring.
Yeah. But you've got to jazz it up a little bit. I actually do like
I'm cake. Hungry.
We know.
Okay, speaking of cookies and, well, sort of.
I want dozens of cookies sent to Phoenix Rising.
Valentine's Day is
attention
coming.
Me.
Valentine's Day is coming.
Oh, it's my least favorite holiday of the year.
Mine too. So we're going to make it better by having a great themed podcast.
Yes.
We're going to do...
Awesome.
We want you... Here are your marching orders.
Uh-oh.
You can send us folks, but only a very select few are going to get in. So make them good. Make them pretty. Romancy.
Very pretty.
We're taking one-minute readings from romantic or funnily romantic fan fiction. Mm-hmm. Should be canon relationships, meaning from the books. The best ones and the funniest ones might get read on the show.
Yes.
Make sure that you are either the author or that you have the author's permission to read their fan fiction on the show.
And my little 10-year-old cousin should not be uncomfortable listening to this.
Right. And we're going to check, and if we find out that stuff, then it's not going to be read on the show. So, please.
Awesome.
Here's another little challenge.
Uh-oh.
Write a Valentine to a character and leave it on a voicemail.
Yes.
music.
His eyes were as green as a fresh pickled bone.
Just like that, and we'll play some of those. Also, if you have a love story from your life related to Harry Potter, tell it to our voicemail. Or you can do all the stuff to our email, too. I'm going to tell you how to do that in a second. You know, the love story thing, we talked about this at the end of Ken and Conundrums, but I'm not sure if it made it into the show. The love story thing comes from a very specific... We have a leaky marriage happening. Jason, Guru of Sloth, who's saying, I yearn for a Pottercast.
That guy.
He met his future wife on our forum.
Aww.
And, yeah, so it's very
And I'm
going
to be the ring bearer.
No.
Rawr.
Anyway, so to do any or all or one or three of those things, yeah. Skype us at username Pottercast and leave a message. Voicemail us at 702-42-53259. That's 702-42-LEAKY. 702-42-53259. In the UK, it's 020-7193-2872.
Don't forget the plus.
Or you can email us at staff@pottercast.com, where the most predictable person ever, John Noe, might read it. Okay.
Hey!
No, but I'm bum.
Is our Pottercast witchy helper, Chloe, who had a birthday today.
Ah, happy birthday, Chloe.
And happy birthday to Chloe.
Jeff had his one. Our editor, Jeff, had one recently.
Editor too. Jeff, very recent birthday. Happy birthday, Jeffy. Yeah.
So let's go over that again, what we expect this week.
Okay.
Silks, if you like, if you got confidence that they're going to be as good, so good that we want them to be on the show. Silks, reminder, are song parodies. So it should be a romantic song whose words have been changed to be Harry Pottery. You could do one-minute readings from a romantic or funny romantic fan fiction
mm-hmm.
of that you have written or that you have gotten permission from the author to do. We're also asking you to write a Valentine to a character, or if you have a love story from your life related to Harry Potter, please tell it on our voicemail.
What about a Valentine to an actor or actress?
Sure.
Or to us?
No.
What's that shameless? Sorry. Hey.
That's the least.
I'll write one for you, Sue.
Okay. Only for Sue.
Okay.
You can write one for me.
John gets enough.
I do not.
Okay. We had a blog challenge this week.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, we didn't pick a winner yet, did we?
No, but they're slowly coming in though, and I appreciate that people have been going out. They've actually really been going out there to their bookstores.
They really have. We're gonna hold off on announcing the blog challenge winner.
Yeah, we're gonna announce two winners next week.
Yeah, two winners next week. The blog challenge remains. Go to your bookstore, ask them when the seventh book is coming out. If they give you any sort of answer, they're wrong. Tell them why they're wrong. Direct them to Leaky, send them to our email boxes to be corrected.
Mm-hmm.
Bring a big bucket of sidewalk chalk and take it to their building and just start drawing on their...
There is no release date for Harry Potter and the Deathly yeah. Hallows, and if anybody gives you a date, they're not only wrong, they're getting other people's hopes up and excited, and they're spreading misinformation and making our lives
March 31st.
Crazy. So we're sending you out in force.
March 31st.
Also, as a reminder, on our MySpace page, myspace.com/podcast, if you friend us and you give and you let us know that you've done so and you've put us in your top friends, we will give you a shout-out.
Mm-hmm.
So this week, some of our shout-outs are from Amanda, Alectos, Dawning of Time, Danny, Sarah Kay, Fat Crazy Kid, Day, Clara V, who invited me to a Facebook group I'd like to forget, Wanless, Joel, Nana Genie, Mark, Frank the Tank, the Harry Potter Podcasters Coalition, mm-hmm. interesting, Charles, Mario, Miss Murder, Marlon, and Joey, and Sue, why don't you do the others?
We heard from Kayla, Christendor, hi, TJ, Tana Proma, K-Chan, Jessica, I Love Tom, Rach, Tazzy, Will, Treves, PCBS, hello, hi guys, I know who you are, Kimmers, Micah, I think it was
it Micah?
You think
is
it was
it real Micah? Is there
Tan?
Another Micah?
Maybe.
Only one
if he asks for a shout-out, I will laugh.
I don't know.
Thanks, guys, for the shout-out.
I'm going to check. You keep reading. I'm going to check in the meeting.
And Jenerva Weasley, Jimbo, Katsuni Boy, Laura, Mim, Padfoot 2, a new fangled redhead, Paige, Pravy, Amy Lee, and Hannah.
Woo!
Yay!
That's right. We're all there on MySpace. Shout-outs.
I love the MySpace.
Awesome. It's just been amazing. All the emails we get, all the comments, y'all rock.
Wow. It's been a great week.
Love comments.
Great week. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the better Pottercast 74s we've done so far this
Wait,
year.
Wait, I'm still checking on the whole... the whole...
Mike Katan did not email for a shout-out.
Oh, I bet he did.
I'm just amused you think there's one Micah in the world.
Anyway. Whether he did or not, I can't get into MySpace. MySpace is having an unexpected difficulty. Oh, freaking MySpace.
Yeah.
Come on, MySpace. Program a better MySpace.
All right, well, Pottercast 74?
Oh, it's the end.
It's the end.
Just go, you're wasting time.
Just go, you're wasting time.
Oh, John.
Yes.
I'm feeling very mistily. I'm missing something, John. They're called...
Yeah, John, what's... What?
Oh!
It's the last one of the month.
The last week, you know, it was just... I had a mental block because I didn't want it to be the last time that I would ever grace the show. Oh, I'm sure it won't be the last time. But I finally mastered my Luna Lovegood, Ivana Lynch impression. For everybody, I've put in many hours of practice. I've received countless critique emails, and I think
let's play the actual clip here briefly. Go ahead.
They call it Petra.
Yep, not bad. Okay,
not bad.
But the actual, how you say it?
They call it Petra. That sounded like your best one so far, Dick.
That is it right there. That is how you call them, Thestrals.
Well, who's next?
Perfect.
Who is next, I think, in the running so far for you to send in some feedback in voting format? It will either be Madame Maxine.
Yay!
Barty Crouch Jr. Not Barty Crouch Jr. Barty Crouch Sr.
Oh, he's boring. Don't you hear
him? Or Gilderoy Lockhart.
Oh, gather round. He's one of my favorites. Love him.
I think Gilderoy. That's what I think.
Love.
We'll have a poll. Hey, quick blog challenge update. I went to the podcast MySpace, and a guy called Ron Stoppable left a message, and I swear it's one of my favorites. He said, I went to our local plaza and checked out the hole-in-the-wall bookstore and asked when the next HP novel will come out. They said that it's not known yet, which is the right answer. If I checked out these websites, JKR's and TLC's Addy, that it'll surely tell me exactly when. So a bookstore, instead of the person going to the bookstore, giving our address, a person behind the counter said, oh, you should check this. I love it. I love the reverse psychology there. Thanks for Unstoppable. Great story.
Yes, thank you. Woohoo!
Yes.
Cool.
I love it. I love how the army is going out, spreading the correct news.
That's right. Our own little Pottercast army. I love it.
I should remind them that these stores that do tell them information correct like that do not take the sidewalk chalk and tag their store. Only do that to the stores that give you the bad
information. Don't ever tag their store, okay?
The sidewalk chalk and say HP 7 is not released. There's no release date for HP 7. That's what you say. And multicolored chalk.
On the sidewalk.
A different color for every letter.
Uh-huh.
Not on their store, okay?
No, on the sidewalk, of course.
And write leakynews.com on the bottom.
Leakynews.com.
No, actually don't. I don't want to get sued for...
And johnnoy.com.
Yeah, johnnoy.com, which is not working.
We'll be soon.
Alrighty, peoples. Shall we skedoodle?
Yes.
I have time for skedoodles.
Skedoodles.
Send in all your Valentine's Day stuff. It'll be a one fun show.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Okay.
Later.
The contest.
Dobby is free.
Oh, and about time, too.
We've missed it.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how a time flies when one's having fun.
Welcome, I can't even do Dumbledore, I want to do Dumbledore,
oh,
so bad, I want to go, welcome, but I can't do it like John can. John, you do it.
Silence!
Okay, I'm starting, really.
Do that again, because of that mask.
Welcome! That's how the mask sounds. Welcome.
This sounds like Yogi Bear or something. Welcome, podcast.
That's Yoda, for gosh sakes.
What happened? Welcome. Okay.
All right.
Thanks for the outtake.
Sorry.
I guess so. Okay. Can I laugh now? Oh my god. I'm sorry.
But when?
Oh god. I had to bury my face in my robe.
That's such an exciting thing to read.
Well, I snorted and I heard you laugh.
When?
Okay.
No. Okay.